Athens News Matters is sponsored in part by the WUGA Community Advisory Council, dedicated and involved individuals who help WUGA stay connected with our listeners, community organizations, and issues in the Athens area. Learn more at WUGA.org.
Today on Athens News Matters, Athens native Aaron Strand discusses his widely screened feature film.
The dynamics of the drama hinge upon the relationship rather than upon the drug experience.
Plus, the tool that may make learning a second language easier.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep. When you roll out of bed, bleary-eyed and groggy, if you're like me, the first thing on your mind is getting something to wake you up. So turn on the radio. NPR's daily news program, Morning Edition, has been working through the night to get you the news you need. It's as essential to your morning as a good cup of coffee. So hit the ground running by listening to Morning Edition from NPR News.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley. Athens native and film director Aaron Strand released his feature, Withdrawal, last year. The film won Best Narrative Feature at the Athens Film Festival last year and was played at festivals across the country. Strand sat down with WUGA's Maya Iyer to discuss the work, which was filmed in the Classic City with the support of nonprofit Nucci Space. Here's their conversation.
I was curious about how you ended up studying film and theater in the first place.
Well, I kind of came of age in Athens, Georgia, and went to school at Athens Academy and got very involved in the drama program there. And thanks to an amazing drama teacher, Lorraine Thompson. And this also happened to be in the mid-2000s, which was really the peak of the pill mill era of the opioid epidemic. And these things were readily available everywhere. So by the time I graduated from high school and went to college, I was already in full-blown addiction, and I arrived at NYU already hooked on opiates. I was very young. I think I was still like pretty high functioning for a while. And I actually had like a tremendous amount of early career opportunities. And I only studied acting in college. Like I wanted to be an actor. I was not in the film program at all. And I started off a career on stage and had a lot of early career success. But unfortunately, my addiction was also rapidly intensifying. And within just a few short years, I had basically blown up my life. And I ended up homeless in New York City and completely strung out on dope. On January 1st of 2013, I crawled back to Athens with my tail between my legs. I did not have the acting opportunities that I once did living in New York City. I was writing and kind of like pouring a lot of the emotions I was needing to process like into writing, and they were kind of becoming scripts. And then I was experimenting with like my mom's little digital camera, and one thing led to another, and I just got really into filmmaking. Now, that started what was essentially like a 10-year journey of trial and error and self-education, and that ultimately, you know, led to finally being able to make a feature film. But, you know, I do really credit Athens as being an incubator and a space to kind of explore those creative impulses. And if I hadn't ended up back here, you know, I don't know, the story could have been very different.
I wanted to ask about specifically how your experience in Athens really affected your film and how, you know, you kind of gained inspiration from the experiences that you may have had in Athens and just how you kind of added that into your film.
I've lived multiple lives in Athens. I've enjoyed everything Athens has to offer as a young artist that's like full of ambition and excitement. And like when Athens feels like this sort of crazy carnival of creativity, I've experienced the dark side of that, which is that, you know, all those dreams and excitement can quickly curdle into the reality of what being an independent artist is, which is like poverty, disappointment, struggle.
Everyone's out to get us.
I know.
They're trying to tear us apart.
We're not gonna let them.
Promise? If they take you away from me, I'll die.
This movie operates completely as a love story, and it's about these two people trying to sort out, you know, will they or won't they end up together, and is it right for them to end up together? And they are dealing with all these very, very archetypal problems of young artists around what is success? Why is my ambition not matched to my reality? How do I get successful? How do I break through? What is being an artist anyway? And I think those questions are really appropriate for artists all over the world. But there's something about Athens and the unique artistic culture and the influx of young people and the transient nature of the town as a byproduct of the university that really makes it a fantastic setting to explore those questions. And so while I did not set out, you know, to like make a quote unquote love letter to Athens, I do think that there's something in the dirt here. There's something in the air that lends itself to these stories about young artists. And so I do think that there is a certain ineffable quality that was very, very appropriate for shooting the film here.
I noticed throughout the film that Viv sings a song or two that she has composed herself. And I was really curious watching the film whether those songs are composed by the actress.
So those songs are all written and performed live by Millie Rose Evans, the actress who plays Viv. And she very quickly, honestly, wrote these two songs. And we kind of went back and forth on some of the lyrics, but like these are her compositions. And she wrote them in character, about what the character was experiencing. And I just couldn't be more impressed and thrilled. I thought it was incredibly daring and vulnerable for her to put herself out there in that way.
To have all that you need, but you don't feel believed in. Hands on my knees, I'm pleading. Can you tell me what you're seeing? A little girl, a little bruise.
I know that there are a lot of flashback scenes in addition to the scenes in the present. And so I was curious about what influenced you to take that route with the film.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't set out to write flashbacks as a writer. I generally dislike them. I do know from way, way too much firsthand experience that when you are withdrawing from heroin, it is very true to the experience that your brain becomes seized with regret and shame, and you search through your memories trying to figure out how did I get here? Because when you're on the drug, all that stuff is sort of numbed and like repressed and pushed down. And then once the drug starts to filter out of your body and your consciousness, all these like things that happened like start to like bubble up, and it's uncontrollable and it's torturous. It was like to be organically truthful to the experience of going through drug withdrawal, these characters have to be going through memory. And so the flashback structure felt almost demanded by the material.
I was curious about Nucci's Space involvement in your film, as I know that you're doing a Q&A with them in this upcoming week. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. Nucci Space was very important in my journey of sort of staying alive. And so when we were raising money for post-production, because we spent every dollar that we had to get the film shot, we approached Nucci Space because we had some investors that wanted to give us money. They wanted to do it through a tax deductible organization. And there are systems to do that called fiscal sponsorship, where if you can partner with an organization that has an aligned mission to the film, they can serve as the financial conduit of the system so that anyone donating can make a tax deductible donation. And then that organization can pass the funds onto the filmmakers while taking a percentage of the, for themselves to cover their administrative costs and to help further their own mission. And so it's a really wonderful arrangement. And Nucci Space, I don't think, had ever done this with a film project before. And so I, you know, sat down and talked with Bob and Debbie and all the great folks over there. And, you know, told them my story. I told them how important Nucci Space was. I told them about the film, you know, hey, this is a film about two young Athens artists struggling with addiction. And this is the exact type of clientele that Nucci Space was built for. While the film deals with, you know, a very specific short time period in the lives of these two people that is kind of like filled with addiction and chaos, you know, throughout our screening journey, we have always been trying to center organizations that are actually saving lives on the front line, of which Nucci Space is certainly one of them.
I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about just what to expect generally from these upcoming screenings and Q&A sessions.
So, you know, for 120 years of cinema, for most of that time, cinemas have been treated as third spaces. They've been places to gather, to meet friends, to go on dates, to hang out with afterward. And something in the last 10 to 15 years has drastically changed. The great thing about having an independent cinema like Cine is that we can do everything we can to sort of bring back the cinema as third space. So much of the joy of going to movies is like walking out with your friend and talking about it. So we want to continue that message, especially when it comes to independent film. You know, we want those local stamps of approval that will convince audience members that this is something that's worthy of their time. So we've partnered with a different community organizer for every single screening for our 7-day screenings at Cine starting on February 6th.
That's really wonderful to hear. And I'm really grateful to have had the opportunity to speak with you about, you know, your experience creating this film and just the types of things that have brought you inspiration and how this film has really come to fruition. So thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Aaron Strand is an Athens native and director of the award-winning film Withdrawal. Screenings of the film are scheduled at Cine in downtown Athens until February 12th. The events will include Q&A sessions with local figures, including artist Montu Miller and Athens Clark County Mayor Kelly Gertz. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA.
Here Now brings you the latest news from around the country.
I have a life brimming with people who've made different choices, and I've never tried in my personal life to impose my choices on them.
Seems to me that people are being responsible, and yet it keeps spreading.
I've been door knocking and making phone calls and working in offices. I'm willing to do anything for this man.
Hear the latest news as it develops on the next Here and Now from NPR News.
Welcome back to Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley. A lot of people want to learn another language, but many stop short, worried about nailing the accent. And for languages like French and Portuguese, there's a particular obstacle, the nasal sound. As WUGA's Emma Auer reports, language instructors at the University of Georgia are developing a tool to help students not only master that linguistic challenge, but approach learning another language with confidence.
Alors on va continuer avec une publicité et on va finir sur ça et après vous ferez le petit quiz qui parle des jouets.
On a bright winter morning, students pack into a small classroom on the University of Georgia campus. They're here to study French. Dr. Sandrine Zawaki is a lecturer of French at UGA, and she says her goal is not to teach students to sound perfect.
The idea is not to reach a perfect pronunciation, but we feel like if we understand and the message is clear, that's necessary.
But one major obstacle in French and Portuguese is something called the nasal vowel.
With nasal vowels, you actually have air coming out of both your mouth and your nose.
Dr. Madeline Gilbert is an assistant professor in the Department of Romance Languages at UGA. She's looking into making it easier to teach people how to say these tricky sounds. Dr. Zawaki says that currently, the nasal sound is learned little by little as the students encounter them.
The idea is more like repetition, trying to make the repeat as well as they can.
The problem, though, is that there are nasal sounds in English. But in certain languages, like Portuguese and French, there are some nasal sounds that most English speakers aren't used to making. This is where the nasometer comes in.
The nasometer, it's a very simple machine. There's a little plate on a handle. There's a microphone by the speaker's nose and the speaker's mouth. And so you put the plate up to your face.
The nasometer is a tool that's been used for years in clinical settings to help people with speech difficulties. However, Gilbert and others received a grant from the university to study how it might be used to help students actually see the sounds they're making.
It records the mouth and the nose separately so you can see when you are successfully producing air out of your nose.
The students bring the nasometer to their face, and the amount of air coming out of their mouth and nose is visualized, sort of like a heart monitor on a screen. Why does any of this matter? Because saying an oral vowel instead of a nasal vowel, at least in French, can turn one word into another.
They risk actually not being understood. And that's something nobody wants to happen.
Being understood is not just important for practical reasons, like finding the bathroom in a restaurant abroad. It gets right to the heart of how it feels to make mistakes, over and over again.
It's very vulnerable to try and try and try and not know if you're gonna get it. And so I think for a lot of students, it can feel like highlighting something they feel most insecure about when they're learning a language.
UGA senior Donna Cervera is a student of French, hoping to visit Paris one day. She wants to try out the nasometer not to make her into a native-sounding speaker, but to make her understandable. And she says it's a good reminder to embrace the process of learning a language.
Learning languages is not supposed to be something you should be ashamed for.
On a wintry Monday, Cervera visits the UGA Linguistics Lab to try out the nasometer. She speaks two words into the machine, one with an oral vowel and one with a nasal vowel.
Fait. Fond.
Excellent example.
For now, Dr. Gilbert is introducing students of Portuguese to the nasometer, but she hopes to move to French in the future. Hopefully, she'll create a whole new generation of students who are not just intelligible, but confident. For WUGA, I'm Emma Auer.
This week on the Georgia Health Report, data shows that the 988 mental health crisis line in Georgia is lagging behind other states as it delivers services. WUGA's Emma Auer sat down with Rebecca Grapevine, a reporter for HealthBeat in Atlanta. Here's their conversation.
First of all, what is the Georgia Crisis and Access Line?
The Georgia Crisis and Access Line is a 1-800 number the state stood up way back in 2006 for people to call if they were having mental health crises or substance abuse issues so that they could get some immediate help and find further resources.
What is its national counterpart?
Yes, that's a number called 988, which the nation stood up in 2022. And the idea was to set up something like 911, where there was one straightforward number everybody could call if they needed help.
And so what's the relationship between these two numbers?
Well, you can call either, and the numbers in Georgia go to the same call center where people who are trained to deal with crises can answer the calls and help stabilize callers and get them the help they need.
So when callers dial 988 in Georgia, are they able to get the help they're seeking?
Yes, in general they are. And I want to emphasize that if people need help, they should call the Georgia Crisis and Access Line or 988 if they need help. However, that said, there were some changes to the lines back in March of last year. And that's meant that wait times and the number of calls that get routed to a place outside of Georgia have increased.
Can you talk a little bit about the reporting that you did recently for HealthBeat about the targets that these lines are trying to reach?
Yes, there's sort of an unofficial standard that hopefully 90% of all calls to the line would be answered in state. And starting in March last year, Georgia's number dropped down to 73%. So that meant that calls were getting routed out of state to people who may not necessarily know all the resources we have here for Georgians. The number started to climb again. It's not as low as it was back in March. So that was one problem. And then also the wait times increased beginning in March of last year. In some cases, callers had to wait, you know, almost a minute to have their call answered, which doesn't sound like a long time, but when someone is in crisis, you know, those seconds can really count.
So what is the future of these crisis lines moving forward?
In our reporting, we spoke to state officials and they said they are concerned about the decline in performance and that they have taken steps to work with the company that runs this call center to try to improve how quickly they're able to answer the calls and how many of the calls are answered by folks here in Georgia. And I just want to emphasize that if someone in Georgia is in crisis, they still can call 988 or the Georgia Crisis and Access Line. These resources are available. They are, for the most part, working. You know, if people need help, they should definitely reach out.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Athens News Matters from WUGA News. The opinions expressed on this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of WUGA or the University of Georgia. This week's show was produced by Emma Auer and Maya Iyer. If you missed a portion of this broadcast, Athens News Matters is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and at WUGA.org. And will be rebroadcast Monday evenings at 8. As always, thanks for listening and stay with WUGA throughout the week for the latest in-depth local news.